the whole 6010. Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And you can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. It is Tuesday, November 16th. We are on to week 11. Field, Matthew, Stefania, and Daniel are here. And I lied already. I've lied once because we are not on to week 11 yet. You know why, Matthew?
Why is that?
Because Stefania needs to have her moment in the sun. Stefania is on top of the world right now in so many ways. Stefania, I missed the game last night. Can you give me the Cliff Notes version of what may have happened?
I don't know, Field. It might take the whole show to present all the highlights for the 49ers. But really, this was the game we've all been waiting for. They put it all together. Like, everything you heard about that could possibly work for the 49ers, it really all worked last night. The things they did, they relied heavily on the run game. And let's not forget, they use wide receivers like Deebo Samuel as runners. So they can be so creative in the run game. They run so much pre-snap motion. It's just, they're so tricky. And for whatever reason, Kyle Shanahan seems to own this ongoing battle between him and Sean McVay. Mm. Like, now I think it's officially become a thing, because so many times Kyle Shanahan frustrates the Rams, and that's what happened last night. Matthew Stafford didn't play well. I don't know exactly what was going on with him. They looked out of sync. But really, the highlights for me were Deebo Samuel just electric all over the field. George Kittle being very George Kittle-like. Do you know it's the first time in George Kittle's career that he has scored touchdowns in back-to-back games?
You love to believe,
but definitely necessary. And, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo had a good game. You know, for the people who are wondering why not Trey Lance, I think you saw last night that when Jimmy Garoppolo is on and runs and executes the offense the way that he can, he made some really good throws last night. He stood in the pocket. He did what he needed to do. And they helped balance it out by running the game. So I thought Kyle Shanahan called a good game. And the 49ers didn't commit a ton of defensive pass interference. That's another problem that they've had. Instead, they just intercepted the ball. Jimmy Ward, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Two picks.
You know, two picks. First game back in a while, and one pick six. And I could go on.
There were a lot of things, we're going to dive into the fantasy side of it in a minute. And I'm going to get back to Stefania in 1 second to brag about something else.
Oh, and Eli
Mitchell.
But
those jerseys are just beautiful.
Fire.
I love those 49ers uniforms they were wearing last night. They have some of the most perfect, aesthetically pleasing uniforms in the NFL. Can we brag on Stefania once more, Matthew?
By all means.
Okay, so like every once in a while, it's cool to be
by the
like...
way, I like the fact that Stefania in detailing the 49ers victory last night. And by the way, you know me, I love to tweak Stefania, make fun of her a little bit. But like, I'll give you credit, Stefania. Like, legit great win by the 49ers. Like, kudos to you and your team. That was legit a really impressive victory by San Francisco. What I would say here, though, is I did love that in your whole description there, Stefania, I did love the fact that you were like, when you said Jimmy Garoppolo played well, like, there was a little bit of surprise in your voice. A little bit of like, you know, look, even Jimmy G played well.
Listen, you know? I've been a lot more solid behind Jimmy G, you have to be fair, since before the season started. But he hasn't he's been far from perfect, but I think that he has given them the best chance to win, but everything needed to work well together. And Elijah Mitchell, I think, also needs a bump, because he was pretty solid last night, too.
It's a super weird thing. I saw a whole thread about this on Twitter, Field, but did you know they did? I would have guessed this, but I didn't know it was this bad. They didn't throw once on first down. There was a first and 15 after they had like a false start penalty, something like that. So they threw on first and 15. But at first and 10, they didn't throw once, which is both A, like, yes, they clearly wanted to establish the run, but also like feels like they don't sort of trust Jimmy G. But on the other hand, then you get into these third downs where you're like, okay, Jimmy, like, convert for us.
Yeah, no,
I'll
tell you what he did last night. This is what he did that was the difference, because I've watched him enough. I feel very comfortable saying this. When you watch, when I go to training camp and stuff, you always feel like there's like this extra beat that you're like, just get rid of the ball a little quicker. Last night, his time to release was drastically down from everything else. He got rid of the ball more quickly, made more decisions, like very decisive. Mm-hmm. And then the whole offense changes as a result.
I think he was 12 for 12 to start the game last night. They had a designed run called on 68% of their plays. Second highest rate by any team in a game this season. Only the Lions against the Eagles. Actually, the Eagles playing the Lions, excuse me. I had a higher play call design run percentage. Sorry, yeah. Daniel. Appreciate but one more that. Thing before we get to the fantasy input here is, again, like, it's cool to be in first place in your league, and it's always good to be in first place in your league. But what's even cooler is when you are in the top 0.005%, the largest fantasy league in the planet. Stefania Bell.
So wait one second here, Field. Hold on.
I haven't even gotten started. Okay, go ahead.
I know, but hold on.
No, it's all you.
Take over. Let me just. Can I help you out? Can I help you host a little bit here for a second?
I haven't even had the chance to start talking. So go ahead.
Because I know I'm interrupting you, and I apologize for that.
There it is. Thank you.
It drives the listeners crazy when I interrupt you. So I'm doing this on very because I think because I know what you want to do here, which is praise Stefania, which is great. But I think in order to praise Stefania properly, and I'm on board with praising Stefania here, is I think you need to set up what the Scott Fishbowl is.
I was literally going down that path.
I don't think you were. I could see it in your eyes.
Okay, got it.
Okay, kids.
The largest fantasy league on the planet, the Scott Fishbowl, which has over 2,000 entrants this year. It's experts. It's hardcore fans. It's, you know, people that just sort of play for fun. It obviously is for a tremendous cause. Our friend Scott Fish, who actually joined the podcast earlier this summer, gave you a whole recap of what the Scott Fish Bowl is all about. It has quirky scoring. It has deep rosters. You cannot make trades. Waivers include salary caps, so it's hard to pick up players off of waivers frequently.
And it is also, you do the draft in the middle of July, before training camp, before ADPs have really sort of settled in.
A Cam Akers injury could destroy you.
Well, exactly. And so, right, so before like any, you know, serious roster shakeups have happened. And so it is incredibly challenging. And as you said, it is really weird scoring. So it's hard to also sort of analyze how players are going to play in, you know, half point per first down scoring kind of, you know, I mean, like, so it's a tremendous amount of fun. And the point of the tournament is to raise money for charity. Again, over 2,000 people compete in this, Field Yates.
And Stefania Bell, through 10 weeks of the season, is in 10th place overall.
Overall.
10th out of over 2,000, Stefania. I don't know what your secret sauce is, but you rock.
You guys are too kind. There's wow. I don't know what to do with all this kindness this morning.
Matthew, I'm sure we'll make sure you soon enough.
No, worry. Enjoy it for a couple minutes here, Stefania.
No, but here's the thing. I mean, I appreciate that. I definitely, there is some luck involved because I've had success with my roster and not a lot of guys getting hurt. But I have to say, I've only lost two games, and they were the two where Patrick Mahomes, one of them, he had negative points. Mm. Quarterbacks are worth a lot. Tight ends are worth a lot. I felt like I was strong there, and I like Austin Eckler's one of my running backs, and Cooper Kupp's one of my wide receivers. So I have some pretty good players that have managed to
Patrick
know,
Mahomes,
stay healthy.
Cooper Kupp, and Austin Eckler.
Yeah, I've got some pretty good players.
Fantasy writer.
They're the best, yeah.
Very well done. By the way, our boss here, Scott Clark, All Biz, the best follow on Twitter, especially for those interested in the war room, at @all_biz. I believe he's 18th in scoring.
18th place overall for Scott Clark. He has been on fire as well. Damian Dabrowski, stat a pillar, is 39th overall in scoring.
So Damian, who is a producer on the Fantasy Show with Matthew Berry, also helps us out on Fantasy Football Now. He is the original stat a pillar on the show as well, right? He's top 40. And by the way, speaking of that, he had Cam Akers. He went with a fragile RB build, and Cam Akers was his running back. Yeah. So he thought when that happened, he's just like, oh, I'm done. Yeah. But he also has Cooper Kupp. He drafted very well. He's top 40 overall. I'm middle of the pack. I was top 100 for a while, and then Chris Carson, and I don't have Alex Collins, that hurt. And the negative scoring for quarterbacks is a weird one. So my quarterbacks in that league are Lamar Jackson and Matt Ryan, who so far this year have played well. Again, it's a It's a super flex league, unless, in essence, you can play two quarterbacks in the league. This week, I got -8 points for my quarterbacks combined.
Yeah, this one puts a big premium on completion percentage this year in terms of the scoring and completions. So it's a
Matt one of those Lamar tough Jackson week did me for in them. This week.
My cousin Griffey Van Meter is actually in 20th place as well. We're in the same division somehow. We're both 7-3. He's just got a lot more points than I do. So my team is solid. Nothing to write home about, but I'm tied with the guy who's in 20th overall place. That's pretty cool. Monday Night Football recap, shall we?
That's crazy that your cousin's in 20th place.
He also is the single biggest fantasy fan that I've ever met. He watches the show every day. Awesome guy. You know, KY for KY. Go check out the general store, the website. We've rocked some of the gear here on the show. Free the mullet,
right, is Griffey. But you're telling me that he watches the show every day.
Every day.
And he's in 20th place.
Yeah.
And Stefania, who also watches the show every day because she has to, is in 10th place.
Scott watches the show every day. Damien.
He watches every day because he's our boss. It's his job to. He's in 18th place.
Yeah.
I think the answer as to why all these people are top 20, me and you, brother,
you're welcome.
You guys are all welcome. Yeah. You're welcome.
All right, let's get to the show. Monday Night Football recap, and as you already know by now, the 49ers trounced the Rams 31-10. Just an incredibly dominant performance from start to finish by San Francisco. Jimmy G was good, as Stefania mentioned, 15 for 19, 182 yards. He had two touchdowns, 15.4 fantasy points. Interesting name to keep on the radar these upcoming games here, just because he's played really well for the Jaguars on Sunday. Could be a potential streamer, certainly a daily play option. But Elijah Mitchell continues his rock-solid season, Matthew, and while he did not dominate the snaps this week, 34-20 for Jeff Wilson, he did dominate the touches. He had 27 carries for 91 yards last night. There are not too many guys who are getting a larger workload weekly than Elijah Mitchell.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
So, And by the way, this is worth noting that through the first three quarters before the game got out of hand, the snap count was 22 for Mitchell, 18 for Jeff Wilson Jr. This was Jeff Wilson Jr.'s first game action.
Right.
I mean, he was active last week, but he didn't play last week, right, Stefania?
That is correct.
Yeah, he didn't play last week. I thought maybe he'd gotten a snap or something like that, but I knew he didn't play significantly last week. Is Elijah Mitchell a sell high?
I don't know.
Because, look, we know that Kyle Shanahan likes to use multiple backs. We know he likes Jeff Wilson Jr. So, again, first game back, he plays a lot of snaps, doesn't touch the ball a lot. They don't really, you know, they're still getting him up to speed. But, listen, they use Debo Samuel a lot as well. It was truly a running back by committee there. And the Debo Samuel rushing touchdown was in close. It wasn't like, you know, some sort of 50-yard end around. You know, like, it was easily a play that could have gone to Elijah Mitchell. Is Elijah Mitchell a sell high? Because you know what? We think this Jeff Wilson's going to eat more into it, and they're doing creative stuff at the goal line with whether it's Debo or Ayuk. And is he a sell high? Because you can point to this 97 yards and be like, hey, you're getting a high end RB2.
Maybe. He's definitely more valuable non-PPR than PPR. He had zero targets last night, even in a night when Jamichael Hasty was inactive. I think the problem would probably be that, like, most people who are going to look at the production over the past few weeks are going to see basically no passing game usage, and he sort of needs a touchdown to cash in as a high-end RB2. So, like, I think he's an appropriately ranked low-end RB2. Plenty of volume. And I know...
But I guess my question is...
I know Jeff Wilson's role could grow going forward, but remember, part of the reason why Kyle Shanahan has had such a roulette of running backs over the past year and a half as guys keep getting hurt or underperforming. Like, I don't think he's going to shy away from the hot hand. And there's more research than you would realize that, like, when there is a healthy guy, Kyle Shanahan stays true to that guy.
No, I know that. That part is correct. And I agree with that. But it's just whatever Mitchell's value is, and we can argue whether he's in a higher end RB2 or a low end RB2. The question is that value going to go lower with the emergence, with the return of Jeff Wilson Jr. and the successful usage of Debo Samuel in the backfield? Stefania, your thoughts on this?
I don't think it will, as long as Elijah Mitchell stays healthy. There is something that Kyle Shanahan absolutely loves about this kid. And they, in training camp, it became apparent that they felt like they'd gotten this steal in the draft with him. But I think he just turned out to be even better than expected. And the thing that they love about him is his physical running, is his willingness to take on contact. And so far, he's been okay. You know, the rib injury was a thing. And obviously, it's always a concern when you have a runner who's going to run between the tackles and not shy away from it. But they love him. And I don't see it really, I don't see it going down necessarily. I think maybe 60-40 is where it would land.
That would still be much. I mean, but if it wound up at 60-40, that would be lower than what Mitchell is at right now, where Mitchell's getting a lot more work. Just something to sort of look at. Two last notes here on Mitchell, and then we can move on field. But number one is that if you have Mitchell and Jeff Wilson Jr. is available in your league, I think he's a priority add in the waiver wires. We've seen, like, whether it's D'Ernest Johnson for Nick Chubb, Mark Ingram for Alvin Kamara, as we start heading towards the playoffs, having roster, you know, having insurance backs, having the insurance for your starting running back, I think is important, especially because we think that if something were to happen to Mitchell, Wilson would be the guy. And I think there's a chance that Wilson has some standalone flex value as well as he continues to work his way back into the lineup. The other thing is, I just want to point out here that you and I feel, and I'll speak for myself here, but I feel like you and I were both on sort of the same page here very early in the season when Raheem Mostert was out for the year. Mm-hmm. And Elijah Mitchell, you know, sort of had that breakout game against Detroit.
Okay.
You and I both said, or I certainly didn't, I feel like you echoed this as well, is we were both like all in. Like, you know what? Like, you've got a chance at an RB1, and I would be very aggressive with all my fab bidding. He's worth a number one waiver pick. Like,
sure.
Go all in here. And we got a lot of pushback on social media about that and just like, oh, look, Shanahan changes running backs and that's stupid. And you're like, you're going to put all your money in off of one game against a bad team, the Lions, you know, and, you know, a sixth round rookie that's unproven, blah, 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 blah. And our argument at the time was, you've got a shot at a number one running back in a very good offense for the season. Like, this was week two or whatever it was, you know, like, sure, heading into week two. And that has proven out, basically. You know what I mean? I know Mitchell's been a little bit banged up, but in essence, if you did that, if you followed our advice at that point, which just goes to speak to, like, as we're learning lessons for next year as well, when an opportunity, and those don't happen very often, but especially early in the season, I think it's more important to be aggressive, especially if you have, you know, a fab budget that, you know, like you've had Elijah Mitchell all season long.
Sure, yeah.
Versus, you know, saving all your money for AJ Dillon right now.
I think that's right. I hear you. I mean, because the opportunity for AJ Dillon to arise certainly exists, but they're not a guarantee. Whereas that week one, turn it into a full season value of Elijah Mitchell, which I think it will be, has certainly proven useful. Let's rip through the rest of these here. Debo Samuel was wonderful again last night. Debo Samuel, 30.3 fantasy points. He had two touchdowns, one through the air and one on the ground, which, like, when Kyle Shanahan goes into his bag and starts getting Debo Samuel rushing attempts last night, like he did on a couple of occasions, just outstanding. He's locking in wide receiver one. I wanted a little bit more for Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
Three catches, 26 yards last night, four targets. The counterpoint is that, like, you're really going to be mad at the 49ers usage of Brandon Ayuk last night when they hung 31 on the Rams and dominated them? Again, they called a run on 68% of their passes.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. Number one is they get a pick six, so that skews it as well, right? Yep. I mean, there's a touchdown without having to have an offensive series, and they got that quickly in the game. And then the second piece is that the Rams are terrible. Mm. Like, I mean, again, in a more competitive game, maybe they have to throw a little bit more, right, but they didn't need to. Like, you know, they were rolling, and the game plan worked perfectly for Kyle Shanahan. So, yeah, I mean, I think, look, if you're ranking the pass catchers, it's Debo, it's Kittle, and then it's Ayuk. The one concern on Ayuk is that, again, it is a run-heavy team, and is there going to be enough passing volume week in, week out to support three fantasy-relevant pass catchers?
Because I think so.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I just think that, you know, yesterday was the perfect game script for them.
Correct.
I mean, it was truly perfect. I mean, Debo was amazing, and he only had five targets. Like, to score 30.3 fantasy points on five targets in a season in which not a lot has gone right for the 49ers.
Sure.
I hope that last night was a turning point, but I think it's also fair to wonder if, like, this team is still more often than not going to be in tussles more so than blowouts. You mentioned George Kittle, five catches, 50 yards and a touchdown. looking like the old George Kittle. That has been awesome to see. The Rams were a disappointment from start to finish last night. Matthew Stafford not exempt from that. He had 243 yards, one touchdown and two interceptions, just 9.8 fantasy points. Really cooled over the last 2 weeks. He has been outside of the top 15 in back-to-back weeks in four of his past seven games, believe it or not. I don't know this for a fact. It's simply projecting. He looks like he needs a week off because he looks banged up to me. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Rams do have a week off right now. So I'm not changing my tune on Matthew Stafford. Still, to me, a strong QB1 in most weeks, Matthew. But the bye week seems like an appropriately timed thing for the Rams this year.
100%. And also, I don't think we can underestimate this. And Lindsay Theory has made this point, and Jordan Rodriguez, who does a great job covering the Rams for The Athletic as well, also made this point on Twitter. Like, don't underestimate what Robert Woods' loss means to the Rams. Like, it's not just about his pass-catching production, but it's also in terms of his leadership, in terms of the blocking that he does on certain plays, and just in terms of the routes that he runs and the defensive coverage he commands. Like, and they've had 2 days to deal without having Robert Woods. I mean, he went through practice on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, all of a sudden you're like, so I'm with you. I think this is a perfectly timed bye week for the Rams. I'm a believer in Sean McVay. I'm a believer in that offensive staff. My belief is that they will get Odell Beckham Jr. up to speed, and they will figure out, they will come out of this bye, get Stafford some rest. I think they'll be fine coming out of the bye. This was a tough one. And by the way, credit to the 49ers, who played really, really well.
Quick night, not much for Darrell Henderson, who left the game briefly. He was tested for a concussion. He returned to the game. Cooper Kupp was marvelous. Cooper Kupp, 11 catches, 120 yards. Matthew's little Cooper Kupp.
Thank you.
11 for 122. Now pacing for seriously one of the greatest seasons ever by a wide receiver. And I know that we have 17 games, so the numbers are going to be a little bit inflated, but still, just a remarkable year for Cooper Kupp. OBJ, let's talk about this one for a second here, though, Matthew, just quickly.
Yeah.
2 catches, 3 targets, 18 yards. He played 15 snaps last night. You know, on the one hand, the instincts were pretty accurate. He's going to have a small package of plays. There was a hope, though, that maybe they turned that package into more production.
Yeah, I mean, we said they'd take a shot or two, and they did. You know, they certainly took one early. They took a deep shot to him early. It didn't seem like either Beckham was running the right route, or Stafford knew where he was, or something happened. It was a weird one here. But I also think, by the way, the Rams didn't have, I mean, like, I think Beckham's night might have been better if the Rams had been better. I mean, a lot of three and outs, and they didn't have the ball very much. The 49ers dominated time of possession in this game and, you know, and just wore them down. Great running, which was part of the plan for San Francisco. So I think that in a better game script environment, you know, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, like they go, 49ers go down, they score the touchdown, the three and out, and then they throw the pick six. You know, I mean, like it was this, right? I think the Rams started with the ball, they turned the ball over, or they don't turn the ball over, they punt away, 49ers go down, score. Then Stafford throws the pick six on like the second or third play of the second series. And, you know, and then
it got off the rails last night. Quickly. So I think you had to temper expectations. Like there was a chance that if things were going great, OBJ scored a touchdown last night, but the real evaluation will come after they return from their bye, which is this week 11. They and the Broncos go on a bye this week. They return in week 12. Van Jefferson had 3 catches on 7 targets, 54 yards. There was a near touchdown he could have had last night, 8.4 fantasy points. And Tyler Higbee cashes in for a touchdown, 3 catches, 20 yards in that score. He good enough for 11 fantasy points.
But it worked out how we said on the show yesterday, Cooper Kupp, Van Jefferson, Odell Beckham Jr. Yep. That's how we rank wide receivers, and that's how it worked out. We thought there was I did say that I thought there was a good chance Beckham scores a touchdown and that they would take shots to him. They took shots to him. He didn't score a touchdown. In fairness, I thought the Rams would do better than 7 points.
I thought they would too, but they got that late field goal to make it a 31-10 game as opposed to 31-14.
That was so insane too, by the way. Like, what are you doing?
I don't know, but it was good. I mean, I had Mackey and a fantasy team. I'm not going to complain about it.
I would like to ask a question about Van Jefferson.
Okay.
Because understanding that...
I'll allow it.
Okay, thank you, Matthew. Yeah. Understanding that we're assuming, coming out of the bye, OBJ will be the number two. Van Jefferson will stay in his likely number three role on that team. Mm-hmm. He's had at least 6 targets in each of the last 4 games.
Okay.
He's available in about 46% of leagues. Yeah. I realize that's not enough to be able to make your waiver column, but is he getting enough target share? And do you think he still will after OBJ that he should be rostered more than what he is?
Yeah, totally fair. I mean, yeah, yes. I mean, he's a good offense. He could, by the way, he could remain the number two wide receiver.
Thank you. Exactly.
Like, it's possible. I don't know how, I don't know if it's 80% likely, 20% likely, 50% likely, but there's a non-zero chance that Van Jefferson is the clear-cut number two pass catcher on this offense he went for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so, 1,000%.
Daniel, good call. I think we're at the time of the year, by the way, where I'm going to remind people that like the waiver column specifically highlights players available in 50% or less of leagues. But just go do some sniffing. There are going to be some guys like Van Jefferson, A.J. Dillon, that might be more like one-third available in terms of overall leagues. Take a look around for guys like that when you are scanning the waiver wire. Quick survivor update, and then we're going to talk about some injuries. But Daniel, I'll hand the baton over to you.
Oh, today we need to say farewell to everyone's favorite fighting Frenchman, Pierre Bacquet.
Au revoir.
Oh, that's amazing. Au revoir, Pierre.
Au revoir.
Pierre had Russell Wilson, Nick Chubb, both Green Bay running backs, Mike Williams and Darren Waller on his team. Not enough to stay alive another week.
Yeah,
only eight teams remain in our Survivor League. Matthew, still being one of them.
Well, he had A.J. Dillon on his bench. He was starting Aaron Jones, which makes sense, of course. Russell Wilson obviously had a bad game, but
yeah.
Dillon was the running back you wanted this weekend. Obviously, Chubb didn't play. He did not have D'Ernest Johnson because I have D'Ernest Johnson in that league. Thank you very much. I am moving on to another week. you know, tough games, obviously, for Mike Williams and Darren Waller. We're now down to eight teams. Pierre Bacquet, for those who are unfamiliar, runs fantasy editorial for ESPN.com.
Correct.
So in terms of all the columns that you read, the rankings, et cetera, that you enjoy on the ESPN Fantasy app and on ESPN.com, they are overseen by Pierre. And so he's going to have even more time to do that now because he is no longer.
Dude, you can't, like, just let him lose gracefully.
In the Survivor League. Au revoir.
More time for him to assign you more columns when he really has more time for.
Can all I right. tell you something, though?
No, I don't want to hear it. Literally, I don't want to hear it.
He doesn't want to do that. Pierre edits my column. Pierre has been my. I would very quickly. I want to talk about Pierre for one second.
Great.
10 okay. seconds.
Sure. Nine minutes later.
Yeah, find it. Pierre used to be the editor-in-chief of talentedmrroto.com way mm-hmm. back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Pierre has been editing Love Hate for me 15 years, something like that. And it's not an easy edit. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a lot of words.
Yeah.
You know, English is my second language, of course.
Of course.
Right. Right.
So it is not an easy edit. He adds to it every single week. He does a great job. And so... it's definitely a tough part of his week, I am sure, and has been for many, many years. So anyway, sorry, Pierre. I feel bad.
But you sound so empathetic right now that like, I think it's so sincere, right? It's so magnanimous.
I feel bad that you lost the Survivor.
You know, no wonder he loves working with you for all these years. You just have this genuine side to you, emotional.
I feel bad. Listen, I'm being genuine about
I'm genuinely happy that I'm still in the league, is what you're gonna say, right?
Obviously. I'm genuinely happy I'm still in the league. I'm genuinely happy that all Pierre's good players are now available
right.
to be picked up tonight.
Your team genuinely needs some more good
yes.
players.
Wow, yes. Daniel, let him know.
That's correct. Dennis, but I'm saying that, like, you talked about his, you know, job. I'm just saying, like, he does a very good job for us here at ESPN.
Of course he does. He's the man.
And one of the things that he does as part of his job is he makes my column better. And so I'm just saying thank you publicly.
Yeah,
I'm just
now he's got
know.
More time to dedicate
and
to
now
it.
And now he's got more time to dedicate to it.
Eight teams exactly. remain. We'll continue to update you throughout the weeks.
By the way, I'm still in it. Yes. I'm still in it, even though Kyle Safi tried to get me out of the league yesterday.
Yeah. Stefania,
gave me a heart attack.
You're in it, but you just don't let us know about it every week, right? You're like, you know, like what's the, when you win, say little, when you lose, say less, like you need to keep that in
mind. Oh, that's good.
Anyways.
Wow, have you not followed my career at all?
Injury updates, important ones coming up in just a second, but do you own or rent your home?
Sure
you do. And fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. It's so easy. All right, injury updates time. And for that, of course, we turn to Stefania Bell. And Stefania, we saw the Eagles lose a tight end, Dallas Goedert, in the middle of the game this past week. I believe it was a head injury, correct? What's the update there?
He's in the concussion protocol, and you know how that goes. But he exited Sunday's game early on a helmet-to-helmet hit. And so now each day we will wait for the updates.
So I'm just going to mention this name, and I am like not the person that just like floats. I know that's your thing. You like the random tight ends more than I do.
I bet
right?
I know where you're going.
But Tyree Jackson is a player who generated a ton of buzz this offseason. The Eagles were enamored by him. They kept him available to return to the roster. Broke his leg late in camp, I believe it was. Big former quarterback at Buffalo, by the way. So just like, maybe later on this week, we'll discuss Tyree Jackson. It could be an interesting daily play, if nothing else.
Or for those in deeper tight end premium leagues as well, do you mention, like, it took him a little while to sort of embrace it, the change from quarterback to tight end, but he has now, and I know, yes, I know they like him quite a bit. And you think about another former quarterback, now tight end, like Logan Thomas, it certainly can work. And so I know, look, with Zach Ertz in Arizona, if Dallas Goedert were to miss this game, Tyree Jackson suddenly becomes interesting, to your point, especially in DFS or in deep tight end premium leagues.
This one's really interesting, Stefania. The Falcons play on Thursday night against the Patriots. Already a short week. Probably not really practicing this week, but we are getting projected injury reports. And what did we learn about Cordarrelle Patterson yesterday?
So he was listed as limited yesterday because of an ankle injury. If you watched the game on Sunday, he was not as involved. His volume of work was definitely down, even though he was never ruled out because of the ankle issue. It definitely seemed to take a toll on the amount that he was used in the game. That usually if you'd see him Monday on a limited report, you'd think that was pretty positive. But there is a report from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network saying that there's genuine concern about his availability for Thursday night.
Okay. And again, quick turnaround. Ankle issue. Arthur Smith was sort of evasive when answering the question yesterday. Mike Rothstein of ESPN, who covers the Falcons for us, asked him, like, is he hurt? Because there was some whispers prior to that report from NFL Network that Cordarrelle Patterson had banged up his ankle. And Arthur Smith said, everybody's nicked up right now. So found a way to kind of dodge the question without necessarily lying about it, right? Like everybody, he is banged up. It just sounds like he might be a little bit more banged up than guys who are dealing with aches and pains that are not keeping him off the field.
Sometimes those things manifest themselves the day after the game too, right? Because a guy will get through it and then all of a sudden the tape comes off. They spend overnight and Monday they don't look as good as they did on Sunday.
But worth noting that Wayne Gallman had 15 carries in this game, game against the Cowboys. We'll have more information by Thursday when we do our full game preview. But Wayne Gallman, like if you play in a super deep league, not a bad name to be adding off the waiver wire if you are thin at running back. Again, you've got two teams in the Rams and the Broncos. You have three usable running backs that are out this week in Henderson plus Gordon plus Javonte Williams. Last one here, Stefania, on the injury front is some good news for the Giants finally.
I know. Saquon Barkley, we've almost forgotten because really we had the ankle injury for Saquon, which cost him a couple of games, and then followed by him being placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. Then he came off of that, but there wasn't enough time for him to really get moving with the ankle issue to see where that was. They went into a bye week. Sounds like he's emerged from the bye week doing much better. He was back in practice for the first time yesterday. Joe Judge sounded optimistic. Our friend Jordan Ronan, who covers the team, posted a couple of videos of Saquon working out, said he looked pretty good. So, you don't get much from that. Like, how close is he to full able to go four quarters in a game? Remember when he got hurt with the ankle, he was just getting to starting to look like his prior self. Right. So I wouldn't necessarily expect, even if he plays, that you're going to get Saquon exactly where he left off.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it's encouraging that he's close to a return.
It's also Monday night against the Bucs, who sound like they could be without Vita Vea, one of the best run stuffers in the NFL, but still a really good run defense. This kind of reminds me, Matthew, of, I think it's possible what we could see would be something along the lines of Christian McCaffrey's return 2 weeks ago when he played less than 50% of the snaps. The big difference between Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley is that, like, he may play less than 50% of the snaps and still get seven catches, right? Like, sure. Barkley getting seven catches in a game is wonderful. McCaffrey getting seven catches in a game is like, oh, how many did it again?
Right.
Even with 50% of the snaps.
Sure, but one of the positives here is that Barkley has been, the limited time that he's been out there this year, he has been involved in the passing game for the Giants. He is a good pass catcher. And just generally speaking, that's one of the ways to attack Tampa Bay is to try to get your running backs out on the edge because they are so good in terms of, you know, stopping the run. I mean, not last week against Antonio Gibson, right. You know, not last week against the Washington football team. But generally speaking, they are good at stopping the run.
They sure are. And we'll see. Giants are a frisky team.
Generally
we'll
speaking. Generally just not speaking. Last week.
Giants are frisky. We'll see just how much they can test the Bucs on Monday night. You might imagine the Bucs are a little frustrated coming off that loss to Matthews' Washington football team. But if you want to relive some good old times, Tom Brady, you can do what everybody should be doing tonight or right now. Watch episode one of Man in the Arena, the Tom Brady docuseries on ESPN Plus. First one is out. Don't know if you had a chance. Came out this morning.
It's streaming right now on ESPN Plus. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but everyone that has seen it has told me it is awesome.
It's amazing. And listen, I know there are so many people that have Tom Brady fatigue, and I understand to a degree. Like, I'm not one of those people. I have an incredible reverence for him. I just soak it all in. But I don't care if you hate Tom Brady. I don't care if he's your favorite. I don't care if you have a tattoo of Tom Brady in your bicep and you love him that much. It's amazing. And it's unquestionably a documentary about Tom Brady. It's also about the Patriots, well, another team that a lot of people don't love. But still, this is about like team building and sports. I think it's incredibly well done. Some really good exclusive footage there. So give it a check out on ESPN Plus. Waiver wire time, shall we?
We shall. But by the way, aren't you doing something? Aren't
So if you want to watch after, so if anybody who watched The Last Dance when it was out, obviously that was during sort of the peak, everybody did, right?
Yes. Yeah.
After The Last Dance, we used to do, ESPN would do these sort of post-game shows, for lack of a better term. Jalen Jacoby were involved. Yep. I think Cassie Hubbard did a few of them as well. Cassie from Chicago, obviously huge Bulls fan, great basketball mind. We did something equivalent to that. Myself and Teddy Bruschi. So we have, if you want to go watch sort of like a post-game wrap-up, Teddy and I had the chance to speak with the incredible Jackie McMullen. Everybody knows Jackie McMullen, a legend, and covered...
Legend in Boston sports.
Covered the Brady career start to finish. If you don't know Mike Reese, you're missing out.
Also
greatest
a legend.
Greatest reporter, period. Does an amazing job with the Patriots. He joined us for incredible perspective. That was when Mike Reese was just starting to cover the Patriots, but he's been through every step of the way of the Brady and Belichick era and still the present Belichick era as well. And we'll have a guest every week joining us. So if you want to go watch, it's not a super long watch. It's just a fun way to kind of decompress after watching the Brady docuseries.
Well, yes.
Well, and now I want to sign up for that.
Really good.
See
it's
my
really
friends
fun.
Field and Mike and Teddy. Like
really good. I mean, Teddy also is amazing.
I mean, Teddy is a football legend. He's a New England Patriots legend.
Can I tell one story?
Yeah. And by the way, he's great
TV.
He's
also a stroke survivor and incredible inspiration.
We love Teddy.
So this is great. But this is why Teddy's so great is that like he could probably just show up and just talk and people would take his opinion for what it's worth. The producer, Scott Frankel, on our shows inside the arena said, hey, you know, if you guys could send me after the episode, if you could just send some notes that might be like useful talking points for what we could discuss, that'd be great. And this is something that happens in SportsCenter, any show you go on. Hey, just a couple notes here or there, right? Like maybe a few sentences. Teddy wrote like 2,000 words. Like he broke down basically every minute of the docuseries, of the episode. And Scott, he was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. It's Teddy. He was literally breaking down film.
Right.
I mean, that's his equivalent, right? It's why, so if you watch Teddy and you're like, that's a darn good point he made here or there, right? Teddy Bruschi puts the time in. Love you, Teddy.
Teddy does the work. I'm going to tell you, not every person you see on television
Phil
does the work.
Doesn't have that luxury of every person he sits next to on the couch. Yeah.
Fair.
But, you know, that shows the versatility of Field Yates, right?
Understood.
No, you're co-host.
Yeah, that's why Field is so appreciative of Teddy. Like, finally I got to sit next to somebody who did the work.
Some perspective.
Somebody who knows what they're talking about. Yeah, exactly. I've been carrying this jamoke for years, but Teddy shows up and it's smooth sailing. I totally get that. There's no question. Teddy understood the assignment.
He understood in the highest form.
Yes.
Waiver wire time?
Let's do some waiver wire time as well. Field Yates, you, of course, write the waiver wire column for ESPN.com. It is up now, I believe.
It is.
Yes, it is up now. And who is your number one pick this week?
I'm actually going to go 5-1.
We're going to go 5-1 this week? All right, we'll do 5-1.
Let's go 5-1.
Who's at number 5 then?
Deontay Foreman for the Titans, formerly the Texans, has me intrigued. Not a great week for the waiver wire. I've been saying this. This is the weakest year of the waiver wire that I can recall, which in some ways a good thing because we haven't. Remember last year when the entire NFL got hurt in week 2?
Yeah.
Like literally every good player, it felt like, got hurt. So many players were injured last season. It feels like we've avoided a few more of those this year, which, fingers crossed, that remains the case. But
what's weird is, not to interrupt you, sorry, we'll get back to this, but just what's weird is that I don't, I agree with you. It's been a bad waiver year just in general. But on the other hand, I feel like, you know, I think about last week when you've got like Dearness Johnson, Mark Ingram, and I mean, like, it's just like, it was backup and AJ, I mean, AJ Dillon, we didn't know.
But there have been a few more instances, I think, this year where it's like the player who's the backup is already on the radar, like AJ Dillon or Mark Ingram, like they're Ingram less so than Dillon, but still like guys who are popularly rostered already. So that's, maybe that's the difference.
Yeah, but I mean, Ramondre Stevenson, like, we'll get to all those guys, but I'm just like, I mean, and by the way, like, Dearness Johnson, you know, obviously we'd already seen it back in week 7. I think part of it is also that we haven't had a lot. I mean, Elijah Mitchell's one of them, but we haven't had a ton of guys that have popped and just been a star, you know, somebody that you picked up and it has been a star all season long. We've had these guys that like are good for a week.
Pockets of success. I agree.
I mean, I feel like you've got Elijah Mitchell, you've got Cordarrelle Patterson, and
not many besides
not much else. Maybe Dan Arnold. Well, anyway, we'll talk about that. But anyway, so back to Tennessee, and Deontay Foreman comes in at number 5 field. Yeah,
monitoring this one, right? Like you said this a couple of days, maybe it was yesterday. Like, eye test suggests this is the best running back the Titans have on their roster right now. I agree with that. I think there's probably a better chance that Tennessee remains enough of an running back by committee situation that none of them are startable week to week than that one of them pops and has the job unto himself. But 2 weeks into this post Derrick Henry world, I think the best chance of one of them popping, absent injuries, is Deontay Foreman.
I would agree with
that. Which I would have totally not guessed the minute that all of everything took place. Number four.
Yeah. Okay.
Elijah Moore for the Jets.
Yeah, sure.
Four straight games with 10 or more fantasy points. Touchdown helped this past week. The volume hasn't been out of control, and obviously they were humbled in a major way against the Bills this past Sunday. Mike White did not have the 400, whatever it was, yards like he did a couple of weeks back, but Moore's a guy who consistently generated preseason hype, really talented player, one of the best wide receivers in this year's draft. The Jets are probably going to be a negative game script frequently, which means they're going to be throwing the football a lot. He is number 4 on my list. Number 3, a guy that you just mentioned the name of, is Dan Arnold, who's available in nearly 75% of leagues. In week 10, he had 13.7 fantasy points. In the 3 games since the Jaguars' bye, he has 17 catches on 24 targets. So nearly 6 catches a game on 8 targets a game. You can say whatever you want about a lot of the moves the Jaguars have made, and they need to work on drops. I mean, good Lord, till they drop so many passes. One of the few things that has really worked in that offense has been the trade for Dan Arnold. He's been pretty solid for them so far.
Leads the Jaguars in receptions, targets, and has more receiving yards than any of his other 2 teammates combined in the last 3 weeks.
Number 2, I'm starting to fear like he just may never get past that 50% roster threshold, and that's Rashad Bateman, and I get it.
How many times are we going to talk about Rashad Bateman?
And I think people might be getting, so I actually am sort of getting the Michael Pittman Jr. vibes from last year, where it's like, you know, the talent is there, the role is there, and I know that the boom games haven't come yet, but like, a year from now, we're talking about Rashad Bateman as a top 20 fantasy wide receiver. Don't be surprised. Just don't be surprised. He's a really unique talent. That much is for sure.
And it's a team that's going to have to throw. I mean, they're going to throw more.
They have no backs.
Right? Yeah, they can't.
It's like the husks of, you know, guys that were good 7 years ago, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm in on Rashad Bateman. I think he should be rostered in more leagues, even if you put him on your bench. And then number 1, I'm going to ask Stefania quickly, is the Patriots also had a projected injury report on Monday. Stefania, I believe we learned a little bit more about Damian Harris.
Right, still listed as a non-participant in the Monday practice report. Monday, just an estimation because the Patriots didn't actually conduct a practice. But I think, you know, the week is starting to get short in a hurry. And for him to not be practicing makes you concerned about his availability for Thursday.
Okay, again, the Patriots travel to Atlanta on Wednesday. If Harris does not travel with them, they'll have to announce that on Wednesday night. So there should be plenty of time to make a decision in regards to his lineup status and the potential value for Ramondre Stevenson, who's my number 1 add this week. And like, if you're looking at this list, Matthew, it's not close in terms of which one would present the most value on paper for week 11 if Damian Harris is out.
Correct.
Stevenson, as we just showed you on the bottom third there, 20 rushes, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns, all aligns with the eye test. You know, I joked it was a preseason MVP, and I know that some things in preseason don't look anything like what they look like once the regular season begins. And then some things do. And it seems like Ramondre Stevenson's presence in that Patriots backfield will only grow going forward. He seems like a really talented back.
Yeah, to the eye test, you're just like, okay, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so he's a guy that was a star in the preseason, but you're like, ah, Belichick tends not to like rookie running backs. But then they get rid of Sony Michel, and, you know, there's been some... Look, it's been a weird year for Ramondre Stevenson, right? He's been a healthy scratch. He's had some fumbling issues as well. But finally, what we saw in college and what we saw in the preseason has started to manifest itself on the field in the regular season. It's a great matchup with Atlanta. So if Damian Harris is out, obviously, I think he's an easy, you know, top 15 play this week. But beyond that, I would argue, and we talked about this yesterday somewhat, if Damian Harris is still active, Ramondre Stevenson is too dynamic to sit on the bench.
Right.
Like, especially with the fact that now James White is out for the year. My expectation is that, again, I'm not Bill Belichick, right? But from whatever I can see, the two best running backs on the team are Harris and Stevenson, and it's not close.
Yeah, and it seems like there are other examples of guys, whether it's like maybe he could be the A.J. Dillon to Damian Harris's
right.
Aaron Jones as right. an example. Like, I know that's not a perfect analog, but the idea being that, like,
Harris isn't used as much in the passing game as Stevenson would be.
Right, right. And the idea that's like, hey, if you're starting one, it's still you're starting Damian Harris. But if you play in a deep league and, like, on occasionally it's actually going to be Ramondre Stevenson that outscores Damian Harris, like, that dynamic could be in play for New England.
In the War Room League, which is a 16-team league, I have the Cincinnati guys. Mm-hmm. I have Mixon and Pirine. I have Stevenson and Harris. And I have Devontae Booker. I mean, it's 16-team league, so that's all I have. We play two flex spots.
Yeah.
So I could see, and I just lost Robert Woods for the season, I could see scenarios. So my last flex spot has been basically Jamison Crowder.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a 16-team league. But, like, so I could see a scenario when I've got everyone, assuming Barkley's back, where I'm playing Mixon, Stevenson, and Harris.
Right.
And then I have Jamar Chase and Tyler Lockett and... like my third wide receiver, you know, whatever. We'll figure it out whether it would be Crowder or somebody else.
You're in good shape there.
Yeah.
But
my point is like in a super flex league or a deeper league, I could easily see the argument for playing both Stevenson and Harrison and just being like, okay.
Pretty good opportunity for Stevenson if Harris is out on Thursday night. The Falcons, they're okay up front in terms of run defense, but not someone that you're totally fearful of. We will see if Harris returns on the Patriots' projected injury report today. We're going to empty the bucket with a few more takeaways from Sunday, but before we do, Daniel, what can you tell us?
You know, we can't all be college football national champs, Field.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. But every one of us, yes, even Matthew Berry can be an Eckridge national tailgate champion.
Wow.
You don't need years of training. You just need Eckrich smoked sausage. To win, you need to show Eckrich how you do you every game day. Do you have a special recipe passed down over generations? Do you dress your sausage with team-colored toppings? Do you lay your deli meat on as thick as you lay on the trash talk? However you do you, Eckrich wants to see it in all its glory. Enter at eckrich.com/tailgate. Eckrich is the official sponsor of the college football playoff. You do you.
Time now to empty the bucket. And whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle homeowners insurance and auto insurance. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com as Empty the Bucket is presented by Geico. Matthew, we've reached a tipping point here with Mike Williams. Mike Williams has four straight games held under 8 fantasy points. If you were to reassess where Mike Williams is today, is he any different now in your eyes than he has been in previous years? Because at the beginning of the year, we would have all said, of course, he looks like he's a top 10 wide receiver for the rest of the season. At week 11, do you value him any differently than you did coming into the preseason?
Yeah, just because I do. I value him less than I did like in week 5, but I value him more than I did in the preseason. I mean, he was a sleeper for me in the preseason,
okay.
But let me say this. I value him differently than I think the general perception of him is. How about that? Because
okay.
He was a sleeper for me in the preseason.
Yep.
So I think in previous years with Mike Williams, it was just sort of like, yeah, these big games will pop up here and there, but we don't see it sustained. But through the first 5 weeks of the season, we saw sustained success from Mike Williams as a wide receiver one.
Sure.
So we know that's in there. We know that's within his ability. We know that's within the Chargers system. Justin Herbert has not been great recently. I mean, the whole Chargers offense has been muted recently. Austin Eckler has been somewhat muted recently as well. You know, it feels like, so I think the Chargers need to regroup and get better. Listen, I don't love their schedule. They're at home to Pittsburgh, and then they're at Denver, at an improving Cincinnati Bengals defense, and then home to the Giants. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a, he's no longer a must start, which he was through the first 5 weeks.
Right.
But he's also not Dumpsville to me. He's way too talented and has too much upside. I think it is a stash and see, and it sort of depends on who else you have, what your other options are, and it's going to be matchup dependent and also roster dependent.
Do you think
you know what I mean? Like,
no, I agree.
Like,
I agree. Yeah.
But he has gone from, he's not Dumpsville to me, but he's also no longer a must start, clearly.
He is, to me, much higher upside and potentially lower downside than Christian Kirk, what we talk about, right? Like, if you have him, you're playing him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the booms are going to be way bigger, but the busts might be like, not that Christian Kirk has consistently put up 10 points in every single game, but like, it feels like you might get a 2.8 from Mike Williams on occasion, where you might get like a 6.2 from Christian Kirk, if that makes sense. Devontae Smith had a great game on Sunday against the Broncos. Looked fantastic. 4 for 66, 2 touchdowns. Great, great long touchdown catch by him on his 23rd birthday, no less, Matthew.
And by the way, Jalen Hurts looked great.
He
like
did.
Jalen
yeah.
Hurts
best
is
game
like
I've
quarterback.
Seen
like, by the, and, like, I could, I had a bad week for Love Hate. I'm just going to own it. Like, I just did not have a good week with Love Hate. But specifically, like, Jalen Hurts was on my hate list. And for the first time all season, because, you know, I'm a huge Jalen Hurts guy, I had him at QB12, and he finally looked good, which is one of the reasons why I wasn't crazy about Devontae Smith, although he wasn't on the hate list last week. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just want to take this opportunity to just say, like, acknowledge. Like, I celebrate the good calls, so I feel like I have to own the bad ones. And this was a tough week for Love Hate. It just, whatever. Matt Ryan just crapping the bed was like, come on.
You want to know something here?
What's that?
Like, I don't think there's any reason to celebrate the bad calls or acknowledge the bad calls. You know why?
Why is that?
You want to do that? Just go check your Twitter DMs, dude. Like, just go see the filth on social media. Like,
yeah.
Listen.
I don't check my mentions.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Smart. That's what you shouldn't do. Because, and like, right. we're all humans, right?
There's,
and
there's, like, yeah, there's toxicity. Angry Reddit
trust me.
About
plenty
me, like,
of people.
Every day of the
we're
year.
All missing it. And if you have a fantasy analyst that you like more than us because he or she is more accurate, wonderful, and I hope you continue to follow that person, but that person's going to miss every once in a while too, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah,
man,
of course.
Listen, the Rams made an all-in move and they were supposed to be this team. I mean, listen, weird stuff happens. The Bucks and the Rams lost to the Washington football team and the 49ers this weekend, right? Like
the week after the Jaguars beat the Bills.
Like, weird stuff happens in sports. Weird stuff happens by, you know, sort of, you get just, it kind of trickles down to fantasy sports. And so I'm very happy to applaud, like, 10 out of 2,000 place. Awesome. Kicking butt, taking names, right? Like, yeah. Crushing it in certain things. I'm cool with it. But, like, come on, man. We screw up.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I know.
But it doesn't mean that you're less, like,
no, I don't
baked
think I'm,
into what you do is being responsible for the bad calls. But
1,000%. That's all it is. I guess I'm not apologizing for them because it's like I'm saying this is what I think will happen and this is why I think will happen.
Sure.
It is reasoned, smart, well-researched analysis. Doesn't always work out. You're trying to predict the future, but there's thought and analysis and hard work that goes behind all those calls. But I also just want to acknowledge it. Like, sure. I don't want to just like be like, I'm perfect, which I'm so clearly not. I don't know. I just think that's part of the process. Is just
okay, fair enough.
Owning it. Is that, that's all.
Sure, but I just think people understand implicitly. Like, we are owning bad calls. Like, we'll reference it. Like, hey, last week I was down on so-and-so. This week I've learned my lesson, and now I'm back up on so-and-so, right? Whatever it may be. Devontae Smith, though, what I was going to ask is, like, is there any chance that this past week was a turning point, Matthew? Or are you more like me, where, like, I'm super stoked about Devontae Smith and had a great game, but he had a great game in week one, and, like, in this offense, the way that it is currently functioning, probably not going to be like a consistent top 15 or so wide receiver. The upside is definitely there, but I think we're probably a season away from being like, all right, Devontae Smith, you got him on your roster, line up block.
No question. Yeah, I mean, I think you have to. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I think that's where we're at as well. Let's.
I mean, at this point, right? I mean, listen,
well, I think at this point, I think there's still a conversation, right? Like, you know, if you have Devontae Smith, you can certainly chase that upside. And there's been decent target share, but
That's what I was going to say. The same arguments we made with Rashad Bateman just a couple of minutes ago, right? I mean, like, so good target share, super talented player, right? And he's getting such target share, and Jalen Hurts turning the corner. Like, I don't know. I think the upside of Devontae Smith is right there with a Bateman or a Mike Williams.
Right, I think it's, yeah, maybe even high, certainly higher than Bateman. Mike Williams, I think it's a conversation. Let's wrap things up here with a wide receiver sort of value check. And some of these are names that you know. Some of them have been around the block for a while. And some of them are guys that are relatively new onto the fantasy scene. But another solid fantasy outlook, another solid fantasy day for Hunter Renfrow on Sunday night, 17.6 fantasy points, 7 catches, 46 yards, and a touchdown. I think, Matthew, we can lock this one in now. Because of the 5 catches per game, like, he is a legit flex play or low-end wide receiver, too, depending on the size of your league.
I feel like we've been talking about Hunter Renfrow for quite some time here. He was on the love list this past week. He's been on the love list multiple times. We've talked about him. He's been on the waiver wire column earlier in the year. Yeah, I mean, that's what that offense is.
I agree.
There is a connection there with Derek Carr. He's had 8 or more targets in 5 of his past 6 games. Like, they look for Hunter Renfrow early and often.
All right, I'm going to pull this up while also reading the last game stat on the fly here. But Jarvis Landry had 4 catches for 26 yards on Sunday against the Patriots. That was actually most amongst all Browns past wide receivers. This year, he does not have more than 71 yards in a game, Matthew. He's also got game logs this year with 9, 11, and 26 yards. I believe that a 9-yard game against the Texans when he got hurt.
But
he also got 37, 11, 26. Like, where are we at with Jarvis Landry now?
Welcome to Dumpsville.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I love the player. I think he stands for so many of the right things. A great teammate. Tough as all get out. It just feels like in this offense right now, like, what made Jarvis Landry so useful in fantasy year over year over year was, like, he's going to challenge for 100, 110 catches in a season. Right now, again, his game log, he's only played 6 games. One of them he got injured, but no more than 5 catches in any game this season. He's averaging 9.5 yards per catch, 0 touchdown catches this year. I think it's probably a fair point to be at with him.
So week one, he was wide receiver 17. He had a rushing touchdown.
Okay.
Since that time, he has not been a top 30 wide receiver, top 35 wide receiver in any week.
Yeah, don't remember those days too well.
He's at best a wide receiver 4 on a passing offense that's broken.
Mm-hmm.
Baker doesn't look right, whether it's because he's injured, you know, because of the offense. Like, that's a team that's going to win by playing defense and running the ball. And so the upside of Jarvis, there's downside, like all these guys, but there's just not upside. There's no upside for Jarvis Landry the way there is for a Devontae Smith, for a Mike Williams, for even a Christian Kirk, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, even a Rashad Bateman, right? I mean, like, so to me, Jarvis Landry, welcome to Dumpsville.
Daniel, what do you got?
I was just curious, Matthew. We talked about Jarvis Landry as part of Welcome to Dumpsville on the Fantasy Show yesterday on ESPN+. I'm curious, if anyone doesn't have ESPN Plus, they wanted to find a way that they could watch maybe their favorite fantasy puppet-led TV show.
Sure.
How is it that they could find ESPN Plus?
Right, or Man in the Arena.
Yes,
or
correct.
Read Fields' column, or read my column, or read Mike Clay's stuff.
All those things.
Any of those things. Well, you subscribe
watch
to
Sports
ESPN
Nation.
Plus, but right, watch Sports Nation as well. So, but one way to subscribe to ESPN Plus for not much more than what it costs to subscribe to ESPN Plus is to subscribe to rotopass.com.
Oh, wow.
Because when you subscribe to rotopass.com, you get a 12-month subscription to ESPN Plus.
Anything else?
And 5 other great fantasy.
Did you say 5?
5 other sites that have DFS lineup optimizers, that have in-season trade management tools, that have great analysis and deep dives, tools, rankings, including all of us here at ESPN Plus. So, great analysis.
Wait a minute, though.
Rankings.
It must end at the end of the season, so, right?
It is 12 months. Whenever you buy a subscription to rotopass.com, it starts and it lasts for 12 months. So if you bought one today, you would get it. It would last through November 15th of next year.
So I'd get it for draft season next year.
You'd get it for draft season next year as well. You'd get it for off season for those of you who play in Dynasty,
right,
who play best ball, who will do DFS in the postseason, you know, for the playoffs and Super Bowl. Really good stuff. So
I've been on the hunt for a very romantic Christmas gift for my wife. Are you trying to tell me that this is what I should be purchasing?
Rotopass.com. And if you use the promo code 06010, you get 10% off. Wow. So it's an even better deal as well. It makes a great Christmas gift. It makes a great Hanukkah gift.
Yeah.
It makes a great Thanksgiving gift. Nothing says, I'm thankful that you're in my life, than a subscription to rotopass.com. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
I love it. You can track the, if nothing says I'm thankful for you, then being able to track Emmanuel Sanders' target share over the past 4 weeks. Let's just quickly touch on Manny Sanders for a second here before we say goodbye, Matthew. And two catches this past Sunday, 7.1 fantasy points because he did add 24 rushing yards. Feels like that hot streak to begin the season has cooled off quite dramatically.
It was a weird game against the Jets. They had four rushing touchdowns. I'm actually not worried about Emmanuel Sanders.
Okay.
Like, we sort of say this a lot, but I just feel like the Bills' passing offense is good, and I just, whatever. It was a big Stephon Diggs game, mm-hmm. which hasn't been the case all season long. Cole Beasley's been, you know, up and down as well. He's been hot recently, but Gabe Davis had more work in that one than he had 105 yards in that on three catches. Just three targets.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not buying that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that some of that production that would have gone to Sanders went to Gabe Davis. I guess I'm still a believer in Emmanuel Sanders. That's a team that runs a lot of three and four wide receiver sets. They're not always going to have four rushing touchdowns. He had eight targets the week before.
Yeah.
I think it was just kind of a fluky game for Emmanuel Sanders.
Cole Beasley barely played on Sunday, by the way. He's been dealing with that ribs injury. Maybe that's bothering him more than you would think because he's still out there playing. But it sounds like he is in pretty significant pain. Let's wrap things up by noting that tomorrow, Daniel, what do you have?
I just want to, this is a me thing.
Mm.
Is it fair for me to say as a Lions fan that if DeAndre Swift was not on the Detroit Lions, we would talk about him in the Alvin Kamara, Austin Eckler kind of conversation as a running back? Because I watch this kid every single week and he runs hard.
He's awesome.
Puts his head down and he's got some wiggle in his game. He is so much better than I think. He's kind of like, I realize Matthew Stafford has had a bad couple of weeks, but he's that kid that I feel like everyone in Detroit realizes how good he is, but I don't think anyone outside of Detroit realizes how good he actually is. Mm. Yeah, he is a good running back, but he's really, really good.
He's a special running back. He was thought of that way coming out of college, and I think that anyone that doesn't think DeAndre Swift is a special running back isn't watching football.
Well said. Okay. Yeah, DeAndre, he's been low on the right
watching
spot.
Lions. Football.
Might be better for their health to not be watching them right now. But
I'm
got a feeling they're going to get a win soon.
Hey,
I'm calling
it.
You know what? Hey, guess what? Star Fania Bell, your 49ers crushed on national television.
Yeah, we had this note in
here. My Washington football team was a 9.5-point underdog and won by 10 points against the Super Bowl champions.
That's right.
And Daniel Dopp's Lions did not lose.
Yay. That's right.
We're back on Wednesday with ranking stuff and so much more.
Crushed.
Let's go. Big week for the 06010. We are back on Wednesday for Matthew and Stefania and Daniel. I am Field. We'll talk rankings tomorrow and so much more.
Peace out.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady out there hustling for us. Advice that we really trust. Bay Area lady, always there to help. She's not a cone, she's your favorite gal. She's Stefania Bell.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.